Hey guys, it's Alfredo.
And this is Brian.
And this is Film Purgatory. So thank you guys so much for joining us. Or should we thank them?
Yes.
I kind of feel bad.
I would say this is more than a thank. This is more like, we greatly appreciate if you decided to tune in.
Right.
But we will not only appreciate, but respect if you're able to sit through the entire episode. And we're not sure how long it's going to be.
Yeah.
We really are not sure.
Yeah. Because we want to go into details.
We're going into details, correct.
So, guys, this is a tough one. This is two parts. So, because of that, I think we're just going to be doing volume one today and then volume two next week.
Yeah.
Trust me, this is for your benefit. There's a lot of detail in this movie, and we want to get to everything. We want to do this franchise justice.
It deserves it.
It deserves it. But, you know, like, bear with us because it's going to be pretty tough.
It's going to be a ride these 2 weeks.
Volumes one and two. Technically, this is a one movie title, but it just so happens to be very long.
Right.
More than 4 hours. So they divided it in volume one and volume two.
Correct.
I saw the director's cut, which is like 28 minutes more. So.
Wait, so 5 hours.
So 5 hours, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it worth the 28 minutes? Like, were you able to feel?
I honestly didn't notice.
You didn't notice?
Okay. I kind of didn't want to watch it again.
Trust me. I'll talk about that later. We'll talk about what you just said. We'll bring it up after we're almost done.
Emotionally, I'm recovering still, but I'm here.
Wait, so recovery is possible?
It's, if you try anything, it's possible. Guys, Nymphomaniac is from 2013. It's a drama independent. I had to look this up. I had no idea what drama or what genre this was. It's a drama / independent film.
Okay.
It was directed by Lars von Trier. He's a Danish director. So technically, this is a foreign film.
Yeah.
Lars has done many movies, including Madea, but most people know him of his Depression trilogy. That's the unofficial name of three movies. Melancholia, that's with Kirsten Dunst. Antichrist, with Willem Dafoe. And The Nymphomaniac, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Which has a couple familiar names.
It does.
It's not exactly nobodies.
Right.
But it's weird to see these familiar faces in a movie like this.
Exactly. Yeah. Just going by the cast, Charlotte Gainsbourg, she was in the entire trilogy of Depression.
Nice.
So she was in Melancholia and Antichrist.
That's the name of the young actress or the old
one? No, that's the old one. I'm including both movies in the cast. Like,
okay.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Okay.
He's in Thor.
Yeah, and the Avengers.
And the Avengers. Stacey Martin. She plays the young Joe, the young protagonist.
Yeah.
Young version of the protagonist. She was in Archive. We talked about this.
We did. And she was also played a small part in The Night House. Remember that?
She did, yeah. Shia LaBeouf, I think, is the biggest name that I thought, one of the biggest names that I was surprised when I first saw him in this one.
Yeah.
Shia is from the Transformers franchise. You guys also know him from Even Stevens.
I love Even Stevens.
Classic show.
Yeah, I just don't know if I could ever watch it again the same way.
After seeing Shia's dick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, spoiler, it's out there many times.
There's a lot of dicks in this movie. There's a lot of nudity.
Right, I was gonna say, like, it's not just penis. Like, we're talking about just the human body, women, male, whatever, all kinds, good, bad. We see it all.
We see full penetration too.
Full penetration.
Sex
correct.
Scenes. There's nothing hidden in this one.
Yeah.
There was no imagination. So you see Shia's dick. Congratulations. Uma Thurman is the other one. That other name that I was surprised. She's from the Kill Bill. She played one of the wives of the guy that Joe, I guess, split up. So Joe was hooking up with a guy who was married, and he decided to leave his wife, leave his family for Joe. And Uma Thurman was that wife. You know, she came by, and she brought the kids along. She made a whole scene of the whole mess. It was really awkward. It was really bad.
Okay.
Willem Dafoe. He's from The Lighthouse. He also plays Green Goblin in the Spider-Man. Jamie Bell. I like Jamie. He was from Jumper. I remember that. That's a guilty pleasure, man, when I was a kid.
Yeah, Jumper was a cool movie.
He's also in Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah, he was the Thing.
He was the Thing,
and, yeah. And the bad one, the terrible Fantastic
Four. Yeah, that was bad. And Mia Goth. That's actually her feature film debut.
Yeah, very young.
Very, very young. She's Shia LaBeouf's wife currently. And she was in X and the spinoff, Pearl. Fairly recent films.
So they made X and then they made a spinoff quick?
There's a spinoff, yeah.
Already?
It's already in film, in theaters.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
And she's in both?
I didn't see anything special on X. It's a 2022 film.
Yeah.
That was a movie.
I didn't see it, but I know it has something to do with, like, they were making porn.
Yeah.
In a barn or something.
Right.
But it's not. You're not worth it.
Yeah. It's technically like a slasher film.
Okay.
But it just didn't meet the criteria for good slasher films, at least in my opinion.
So it's too modern of a slasher.
Yeah, kind of. I remember you showed me a slasher film not too long ago. I enjoyed that one a lot more than this one. It's the one where, like, they're at a carnival.
Oh, okay. Damn. I can't remember. I know exactly what movie you're talking about, though.
Right.
It's pretty, yeah. Okay, there's a couple modern slashers that, yeah, stick true to their nature.
Right. But this is a great cast. Fantastic cast. A lot of weird names out there that I wouldn't expect to be part of this project.
Correct.
But
even if their part was small, it was just strange to see them.
Right.
In this film.
So before we get into details, I guess we should give a backstory of what's going on in this film, as generally as possible, because we're going to get to the details in a little bit. But basically, this movie starts off with some beaten woman on the ground and some older gentleman coming by to help her. Played by Stellan Skarsgård. And the woman is played by Charlotte. She's Jo, like we mentioned, the protagonist in this film. And they go back to Stellan's house. And he helps her rest and recover.
Yeah.
And as they're doing so, as she's doing so, actually, she tells him her story, how she got there, and why she supposedly is, in her opinion, the worst human alive. And we basically get a rundown of this girl's entire life from beginning to present.
We're talking about from infancy to present day. And so... Right. Which explains the long runtime of this movie.
Right.
The director spared no detail in explaining the tragedy she's experienced, the trauma, how environment has influenced her, how she was from the very beginning, just her own personality. It's a crazy, crazy ride.
So for this long detail, for this story, riddled with details, we're going to do some points. Basically highlighting some points in this movie.
Correct.
And this is where it starts getting dark. Okay, so there's no detail expensed here. There's nothing hidden. Everything is very much exposed.
I would say if it's not dark in nature, it might just be uncomfortable due to a lot of people's tendency to avoid certain topics.
That's true.
And that's what I like about this movie, is that there are times, like, the way it starts, it's immediately meant to make you question, like, what the fuck is this director trying to say? What is the whole purpose? And let's just start off the bat. The woman is asked, as you said, to explain her life story to Stellan Skarsgård's character. The whole movie is essentially a narration. The movie begins, I would say, very dull.
Mm.
She just explains, well, from when I was a little girl, I was very familiar with my body.
Right.
And she's just, I used to wet the floor and drag my vagina across the floor.
Right.
And my clit, and like, she would regularly refer to her vagina as pussy.
Right.
In the film, as they were narrating the whole film, right? It begins. And of course, there's clips of babies not doing anything crazy, just on the floor, like, just doing what she said, which is on a wet floor. And it's immediately like, whoa, what the hell are you talking about?
So this movie does a really good job, I thought, in conveying different aspects, different points of views into this. And a lot of that has to do with Stellan Skarsgård's character, whose name is Seligman.
Seligman.
And he's comparing whatever he's hearing from Joe and he's comparing it to something else, whether it be fly fishing, whether it be poetry, whether it be books.
Correct.
He's explaining different things, and not only is he explaining it, but sometimes they show you, like the film, the cinematography in this one.
Yes.
Seligman is explaining something, and they visually show you Correct. What he's talking about. I love that. And one of the, I remember specifically what you were talking about. Seligman was talking about, you know, it's not unheard of babies or fetuses playing with themselves while they're still in the womb. So that was something that was, you know, played into this movie and kind of goes along with what she was talking about.
Right. And that is true. It's not something the director is. Exactly. He's not sick. He's right. not. It's true. If Facts. Look it up, it is not uncommon to have very, very young kids discover their bodies and do it for the fun of it.
Right.
And it's not sexual for them because they don't know what that is. Exactly. To them, it just feels good.
Right.
Right. But that is, again, it is seen. It's not a crazy topic. So that's how this movie, it sets the tone from the beginning. And like, we're going to talk about everything related to sex, no matter what, whether you like it or not. You know, right. And it's like from that point, okay, you can turn it off. I understand. It's not. That's why I tell people, if you can sit through this whole episode, we appreciate you.
Right.
And we respect that. Because sitting through the film is tough. Talking about it, I think, is maybe just as hard. So, you know, she's talking about how she was essentially masturbating from infancy.
Right.
All the way up until, you know, a young teenager.
Right.
And throughout this, she's explaining how her relationship with her father wasn't necessarily bad because he was in a low life. He wasn't right. some bum. It wasn't like she was in a traumatic experience where she had, you know, quote unquote daddy issues. No, the director did not play on that cheap topic that a lot of dudes will bring up when it comes to women and their sexuality. No, she was like, yeah, I love my father. Like, we had a great relationship. You know, he talked to me about this. This was his career. So we always did this. Like, and there was nothing creepy or weird about their relationship. It wasn't a grooming type thing, you know, nothing at all. They did have a good relationship.
You can say that this, essentially what he's saying there, he's implying that this can happen to anybody.
Exactly. And that's what it is that it's not always related to, you know, mom and dad or
right.
or because something happened, an event, you're like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This girl was conveying from the beginning that this is just how she was.
Right.
She understood her body. She was comfortable with it. Never had any shame, whatever. But was just more reserved in admitting it
mm-hmm.
because she just wasn't sure if somebody else felt the same way, whatever. Anyways, she makes it known that she knew what she wanted at, you know, once she began puberty, right?
Right.
And somehow she came up to Jerome. He was always like fixing his bike around her house. I think they were neighbors.
Whoa. That's a moped, okay?
Oh, excuse me, a moped.
It's not the same animal here.
So, you know, she explains like somehow they find each other, or she always sees him. You know, it's like one of those, I see you see me, but they never had any talk. He was right. older than her.
Yeah, he was.
I think she said he was 16 or 17 at the time, and
I'm
she was
sure.
like 13.
Something like that.
It was like not a big difference, realistically,
mm-hmm.
but from teenage years, it's a big difference developmentally.
Right.
Like, he was maybe 16, 17, she was 13 or 12. It was definitely young.
Somewhere along those lines.
But I think she just gave herself up to him, and he was like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and from the very beginning, we're talking about this, the first 15 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
We just see him pull out his dick and just fuck this girl.
Yeah. So, luckily, they did mention, they put a disclaimer at the end of the film. There was no, the professional actors in this film had no involvement in penetration during the sex scenes. They were used with body doubles. So, although it's implied that this girl is a minor, there was nothing illegal in this film.
Right.
It's, you know, she's not, I'm not sure how old that actress was, but yeah. she was not used in that scene.
Okay. I mean, yeah, regardless, regardless, it's implied that they're both minors, so
right.
it would still be child pornography, so I understand
exactly.
why that disclaimer is necessary. I mean, but like you said, since they are using body doubles, as long as the body doubles are adults, it's mm-hmm. okay, right? Legally. And I think that's the loophole that people are not okay with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I can understand it. I completely understand that.
Right.
Like, me personally, would I ever make a film like this? No.
Yeah.
It's just a little too weird.
It's crazy.
But I respect the attempt, and I respect what he's trying to do with these 4+ hours.
Right.
You know, so from here, we get a quick jump. She kind of just explains, yeah, that was me. And then, you know, from there on, I just kind of fucked whoever I wanted to fuck. Well, and it meant nothing.
Yeah, because that was a significant moment in her life. That was her first time.
Yeah.
And that's going to come up later.
Correct.
Later in the film.
So she grows up. She grows up. couple years later, I believe now she's what, 16, 17, 18?
Yeah, she's still a teen. She's still a teen.
Still a teen.
Right.
Still a minor. And now she's discovered a friend that has that love for sex the way she does, has that craving.
Right.
And so they're having competitions on trains to see who can fuck the most on a day, on one, on one day basis. We're not even talking about like a week or month. And right. they're just going off one. It's just, it's nonstop. And all that just to win a bag of candy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because they really were fiends. You know, it's like they were just deviants and it was nonstop, you know. But then morality came into play when the bet was you had to force a married man, right? You had to get a married man, somebody who did not, you know, was not going to be an easy throw yourself at them to actually ejaculate. Like, it wasn't, it's not just about you putting your hands on him. No, he has to let you continue until he ejaculates.
Yeah, because the competition was with, between Joe and B. B was her friend.
Yeah.
And B was winning, and they tried to make an advance on this man who actually bought them a ticket in first class, you know, just so they can stay.
Yeah.
But the man, he wasn't having it. You know, he really wanted to just be by himself and not partake in any sexual acts or anything like that. So B made a bet with this guy, or made a bet with Joe, to see if she can get him to actually ejaculate him, not necessarily have sex, but just to get him, basically.
Right.
And I guess that was her first point to try to defend the case in that she was a bad person, because essentially this man was trying to save himself. It's not that he didn't want to. His wife was ovulating and they were trying to have a kid.
Right.
And he wanted to save that sperm for his wife to have a child, to start a family, something that they didn't have. So knowing so, she ruined the possibilities, Joe ruined the possibilities of them possibly having a family
right.
for a bag of chocolates.
Correct. That was the morality issue that was first presented.
Right.
You know? And like I said earlier, it's being narrated.
Right.
So as it's going on, we're hearing Seligman, you know, talking about, oh, but what if, you know, you actually got like the first batch of sperm, what if it was just because he held it in for so long? A lot of times when you hold in the sperm, it does die. So you ejaculate dead sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying, what if you don't know how long he's been holding it? What if you ended up helping him conceive because the next batch of sperm was the live ones?
Right.
How do you know that? You don't know that for a fact. Because I remember the detail was not only was she ovulating, but he did not want to ejaculate, right? He supposedly, that he was also at his peak. His wife was ovulating. It was a big thing.
Right.
And so for her to go through with it anyways was like such a slap in the face. Like, yeah. You're a real bitch. Forget about being a fiend. You're a cunt. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
This man trying to start a family. And like I said, they do show, pulls out the penis, shows it in plain day, puts it in her mouth. You know what I'm saying? And she keeps going until he ejaculates. And they show the ejaculate. You know, it's, this movie does not hold back.
Right.
It was weird. It's like I've never seen it before. But
right.
after you're done, you're like, okay, I got it out of me. That's it. The movie, you know, right. It's all done. It's over.
I think a lot of the times while she's telling the story, Seligman is really trying to defend her and trying to, you know, go to her aid. And
right.
he's using facts and different references to try to, you know,
And the symbolism, like you mentioned, he uses examples to defend her, like, oh, but what about this, this, and this?
Right.
Very philosophical.
And the reason why he's doing so is because they mention it later on, and I think it's a noteworthy point to mention about Seligman. They're really polar opposites. Joe, who's very sexually experienced, is quote-unquote a nymphomaniac,
right.
has a lifetime full of experiences in the sexual nature, where Seligman, he's not. He's a virgin. He's asexual. He's a proclaimed asexual.
Yeah.
So I think I like that contrast that they used in the story.
Right.
Two different points of views. And I think that's why, you know, he defends her that much. Or he's so right. devoted to defending her.
Because she herself even sees how much the negative, I shouldn't say negative impact, but the impact that comes from a high sexual lifestyle, at least right. for her as a woman. And it's like, it's so shameful. And she kind of has tried her whole life to always be more free and not care.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after that scene with the friend. I'll go back to that. But like every time they go, he's like, oh, she says, oh, but what about this? And I could have, you know, and he'll say, but,
right.
you know, and then he'll give his points. And it's a back and forth. It's almost like a debate.
It was, yeah.
And it feels refreshing to hear a debate going on about these topics that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. It's a gripping type of tale, I would say. Really, really hooked me. But going back, like I said, so her friend eventually found the guy and fell in love. Mm-hmm. And she felt betrayed and deceived. This was like, well, how dare you? You know, we said fuck guys and fuck love. We don't need none of that. We're just here to fuck. We're just here to have sex. Like,
right.
That's our life. Hedonistic lifestyle. Self-pleasure. Whatever. So she felt betrayed. Like, you know, screw you. You know, and they kind of went their separate ways. Mm-hmm. Never to really rekindle at all.
Right. Yeah, she didn't. I remember her mentioning, B mentioning that the secret ingredient to satisfaction was or to sex was love. That was the ingredient that they were missing.
Seligman said that?
No, B, her friend.
Oh, the B. Okay, the B.
And I think that's why Joe got so offended over this, because, you know, how can she fall in love? That's crazy.
Right. Of course.
There's no way that she was missing a secret ingredient to love. You know, correct. There's no way. So Joe has many sexual experiences after that. A lot of different guys. She's living her life
to the fullest extent.
To the fullest extent.
Without a care in the world.
Exactly. And then she's looking for a job. She was studying medicine because that's what her father did. And she figured out it just wasn't for her. You know, she tried, but she kind of just lost interest. So she found herself looking for a job. And that's when she reunited with a familiar face. She got a job. And the only reason she got the job, because she was very underqualified. But she got the job because she knew the current boss at that time.
Yeah.
Which just so happens to be Jerome.
Yep.
The guy that she lost her virginity to.
Yep. And she liked the way he looked. Like, she was kind of, not taken aback, but she was freshly reminded of, like, who he was. Now he looks more like a man, grown up, a job. Right.
Initially, she didn't warrant any sexual advances. She just wanted the job and tried to be professional as possible.
Yeah.
So she did turn him down. But over time, working for him, she noticed little things and the way he moved, the way his hands were.
Right.
And she just kind of fell in love with him and how he was. And she just wanted to be around him and be touched by him, by his hands, as she said.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, right before she was ready to proclaim her love to him, you know, his uncle came back and he wasn't working anymore. Jerome decided to leave. He went on to travel and he ran away with the assistant.
That's right.
And they got married.
Yep.
So essentially, that story was closed in her book. You know, Jerome's gone and right. That's it. So what did she do after? She did what she always did. She just had sex.
Continued on doing what she wanted to do. And I would say this is the first time that now it's not just about pleasure. Now it's kind of like filling a void, because this is her first real heartbreak, kind of, would you say? Aside from the best friend thing.
It was that, but also during this time she was losing her father. Because
he was sick.
He did, yeah. He had cancer.
That's right.
So at some point he was experiencing delirium, and that's one of the points that Seligman was talking about, and he was giving references to other types of. Yeah. He was giving facts, and I like that. But she was losing her father. She was going through that grief state, and she used sex yeah. to try to grieve that. And you know, when she did finally lose his father, you know, she was kind of empty, which is normal. It's not unheard of for people to turn to that.
Which is why I say filling the void.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. It's a common thing to do.
But in doing so, she was causing harm to other people, to herself, of course, but to other people. Like mentioned before, she did break up a family.
Yeah.
She was a homewrecker. She did have...
With no consideration.
No consideration. Whatsoever. Like, this man decided to leave his family for her. He showed up to her house, and then his wife followed her there. She brought the children.
Yeah.
And then in front of the kids and everybody, Joe just told him, listen, I don't love your father. Like, this is a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And she actually had a guy come over that same day, so he was sitting down too. It was really weird.
Yeah. It's a funny thing, because she was like, bro, I do not care at all.
Right.
Like, you got to resolve this with your husband.
Exactly.
I promise you it's not my... Right. No, I don't care. But... Again, it goes back to that, do you have control? Like, is it okay to, you know, solve your, is it okay to satiate your needs at the expense of somebody else's kind of stability, their life? You know, it's their decision still, but you're taking a part in it, and I like that, because they're, like I said, as I said earlier, it's just a constant narration. So right. Seligman and Joe, modern day Joe, not young Joe, so her voice is a little different,
right?
Because obviously it's played by a different actress. They're going back and forth constantly. It's just like, it's a different perspective on everything.
Right.
It's just, it continues. And like I said, this was one of those moments where it wasn't sad or happy, but it was a little humorous.
Right.
It was the few times it was humorous. And then you have the, you have that flow of, I don't know if you remember, it was like scene after scene where she would just tell the guys, like playing with their emotions. She just loved it, saying like, oh, I've never came before.
Right.
Whether or not she actually came. And it was like all types of guys. It wasn't like she had some standard. Mm. It was all types of guys. Short, tall, you know, black, white. She had like fat, skinny, everybody. It was literally all kinds of guys. She did not. And I think they made a point to show that. It was right. like, it didn't matter. As long as they had a penis, she was on that. She would just try it, and she would get a kick out of it.
Right.
Just being able to get these guys to come over and give themselves up like little, you know, like little whores, essentially.
Right.
Like flipping the script. Like, they're the whores too.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Three special guys that she does mention within her story. I forgot what they were, but I know she was comparing them to something. To a cat, or one of them had a special connection with her mentally, and he had special privileges. But I like the comparison that Seligman did. He had compared these three guys to music, and essentially each of these guys had their own traits and giving off certain different notes, making a special song. But one of the guys that was mentioned by Joe just so happened to be Jerome. And the way they reconnected, or re-encountered, I guess, had a re-encounter, and she was just walking in the park, and she noticed some pictures, some photographs on the ground, and she picks them up, and she noticed that they contained Jerome. And Jerome just so happened to be at that park, and they reconnect. But I like the fact that coincidence, that series of events that just, a little bit too much of a coincidence, is acknowledged by the director here. Seligman mentions that, how that's too much of a coincidence, that can't be. But it's disregarded by Joe, saying that, you know, it's her story, she knows the facts, and if you want to hear the story, just hear the story. If you don't want to, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I like that, you know, you acknowledge the inconsistencies. Not only do you acknowledge it, but you embrace that.
Right.
No story's perfect, but I like that little detail put into it. But essentially that's how Joe came back with Jerome.
Yeah. And I wanted to say before we continue on that, was like, that was one of the few times where symbolism overshadows story.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I like the director's like, yeah, I know it's coincidence. I know it's very convenient,
mm-hmm.
but there's a reason for that.
Exactly.
This Jerome is not just a man. He symbolizes a big part of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing on, they, like you said, they rekindle. They mm-hmm. kind of, they get back together. An open relationship, if I remember correctly.
Well,
or not yet.
I'm not sure. I think she was ready to settle down with Jerome. I remember at this point, she started remembering of her friend who mentioned the secret ingredient to sex being love. And she kind of realized that, wow, she had a point. B had a point. Like, this really is amazing. And during that time, unfortunately, when she's finally feeling something, is when she loses the sensation of her lower body. Like, she just doesn't feel anything anymore.
This is now nearing the conclusion of the first film.
The first volume, yes.
If I remember correctly, it was like, that was, to me, that was great, because you want to continue.
Exactly.
Like, how does that happen? And she was having a mental breakdown. It was right. I thought it was a really well done scene, because they're like, sex, sex, sex. And it's like different positions, different scenes, and different times of the day. And it was nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerome eventually was like, he was not just exhausted physically. He was almost just, he almost looked like he was mentally not right. Like, he could not handle this. He needed to just stop.
Right.
That's it. You know, it wasn't just physical. It was almost torture for him. Like, I'm done. You mm-hmm. know, I can't. And she was like, hey, no, what are you doing? You know, like, she's grabbing his dick and like shaking it so he can get hard again. And he's like, bro, I'm done. It's been hours.
Right.
For all fucking day, bro. No, that's it. And so she's upset. But then in that little, I guess, argument, she kind of realizes, like, oh, like, what the, you know, she's kind of freaking out, like, what's going on? And then you know, we're not sure yet, but it has to do with her vagina. And she's going to the kitchen and she's like slapping her vagina. Okay, she grabs a rag and she starts like hitting herself, you know, and it's like, what the hell's going on?
Right.
You know, she's trying to feel something. She's having a breakdown. She kind of falls to the ground a little bit, if I remember.
Right. And yeah, she's. And that, and Jerome comes by and to try to console her.
Yeah, like, what's going on? She's saying she just cannot feel, her vagina is numb. She cannot possibly feel anything, like, in her vulva, you know, her clit, nothing. It's just, it's all numb in that area. It was another one of those disturbing scenes because of the way she was reacting.
Right.
It's just, this is, and I'm going to go back to this later because it was interesting to see how she was willing to just hurt herself.
Mm-hmm.
For the sake of feeling something,
right?
You know, and it was again metaphorical for something later down the road.
And so that would be volume one.
Yes, that's the final.
That's the final scene, volume one.
Yes,
and you know, next week we're gonna get into volume two. But man, this is a crazy movie, and you know, it only gets worse. It only gets worse. There's some. There's some concepts. There's some topics. We touch up on volume two, that's a little bit heavier.
I would say volume one crawled so volume two could walk. This is one of those, like you said, no, it gets worse, but volume one really prepares you.
Right.
Because volume two gets worse.
Yeah. IMDb gave this a 6.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes gave it...
Nice.
That's pretty good. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 76%. Firm Purgatory score?
9 out of 10.
I would give it a 9 out of 10. I really enjoyed the storytelling in this one.
Prime storytelling.
Really. It was very good storytelling. I like the visual details on that one. I don't really see that in a lot of movies. And nope. I feel this movie did it. Not only did it, but they did it. They executed it very well.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of symbolism being an overpowering ingredient in this film. I think the symbolism in this film was done just the right, like, yes, the right amount.
I agree.
So, and the acting, of course, was phenomenal, in my opinion.
And sometimes the symbolism wasn't a mystery, which is what I appreciate. It's explicitly said, like, oh, well, this, and exactly, as they're having the debate. And I like the way the symbolism is explicitly told sometimes. It's like, it's to your face, okay, well, as they're having the debate, you know, this could probably represent this and whatever. And, you know, and all the, as the details come up, things kind of fall into place, and Seligman himself will do the callbacks for the audience.
Right.
He's like the narrator as like a medium for the very disturbing and I would say unique storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just visually showing you in a movie, he's like narrating you as almost like a halfway point for the audience. Mm-hmm. And he will do the callbacks for you and kind of be like, oh, this and this. And I really enjoyed that.
I mentioned this before. We watch movies just to be entertained, not to have to think about something. So this movie does a very good job. Definitely entertaining. Very raw. But getting into volume two next week. Real quick, Brian, do you see anything that you want to talk about?
Not anything specific, honestly. I've been still with my anime. A lot of movies haven't caught my attention.
Nice.
What about you? You've seen?
I just saw Don't Worry, Darling.
With Harry Styles and Florence Pugh.
Olivia Wilde is the director in this one. I wasn't a big fan, I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like I get it. I get what the overall point was, but I felt like it dragged. It took forever to get there, and the payoff was just not worth the ride. It was just, you know, some points of this movie were good. I think that the acting was great. I'm a really big fan of Florence. I think she's extremely beautiful. And Olivia Wilde acted in this one as well, directed/acted. So, I mean, the acting wasn't bad. Harry Styles did okay for songwriter/performer. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Better than LeBron?
Yeah, for anybody's better than LeBron. A sack of flowers better than LeBron.
Yeah,
but,
true.
But it just was a miss to me. Honestly, I'd give it a 5 out of 10. It wasn't all that great. Yeah, it wasn't all that great. But Don't Worry, Darling, out in theaters. Watch it, guys. Or don't watch it. Do whatever you want. I don't know. Next week, of course, we mentioned Volume 2, Nymphomaniac. If you were not deterred by this week, we are more than glad to have you for the following week.
You might be deterred next week. Yeah,
conclusion. Heavy conclusion for this one. But that's going to do it, guys. We really appreciate the support and all the feedback. If you liked today's episode and you have ideas for future episodes, definitely get in contact with us. You can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Our username is Film Purgatory or Film_Purgatory.
And please remember to turn on all notifications on your streaming services so you know as soon as we drop the latest episode.
Thanks again, guys, and we'll see you
next week.